Court will proceed to the fourth case of the day, Chicago Prime Packer versus Packers versus Northam Food Trading. Mr. McKnight.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Neil McKnight. I represent Northam, which is the defendant appellant in this matter. This is a dispute arising over a sale of pork loin ribs that are governed by the Convention on the International Sale of Goods. We're asking for the reversal of a judgment entered by the trial court after a three-day bench trial. The reason we're asking for this reversal is based upon what we consider were errors made by the trial court in applying the convention to the facts and evidence that were introduced at the trial. First, the trial court failed to hold the plaintiff to its required standard of establishing its prima facie case of moving forward. In so doing, the court only required that the plaintiff establish that a contract existed, and it mentioned specifically in its opinion under Article 25 of the convention, and I will refer to the convention simply as that for the rest of my argument, that there was an existing contract and only the existence of the contract was necessary to establish a prima facie case. However, the convention requires more. The convention requires that Article 35, which establishes the goods that are delivered, they must conform to the contract terms. The trial court did not require that, and the evidence that was presented at trial was insufficient to establish that the goods conformed pursuant to Article 35 of the convention. Second, the court misapplied Article 38 and subsequently Article 39 of the convention by interpreting the convention to require what I will call a strict inspection term, meaning the shortest possible inspection term for a buyer under this situation. And the language of the convention is specifically creates the tension, essentially, and it says that the buyer must examine the goods or cause them to be examined within a shorter period as practical in the circumstances. Well, the idea is to obviously cause a buyer to do it as quickly as possible, but it's also asking the trier of fact to take into consideration that there are circumstances that suggest there are different varying periods of time. In these circumstances, the inspection term should be longer than what the court adopted. Essentially, the court defaulted to what is a number of cases, and there's been a suggestion in the briefs that we oppose the essentially looking to foreign case law. It's not that we're opposed to looking to foreign case law. We're opposed to looking to a narrow set of foreign case law. We're opposed to them looking solely to the traditions where the inspection terms are very narrow. And so for that reason, we felt that the court did not consider other traditions that govern the application of the convention to these type of disputes which have longer inspection terms and consider different legal traditions. And that's specifically important in the circumstances of transactions that go on throughout the United States and throughout the world because we're a buyer nation. We've become a buyer nation and it's going to apply to a lot of contracts that apply all over the world. I'll go back to the evidence with regard to conformity. The trial court stated essentially in its opinion that there was sufficient evidence to establish that there was conformity based upon a number of documents that were presented from three different sources. The three sources that presented documents were Brookfield Farms, who were the ultimate producer of the meats, B&B Freezers, or B&B, which held some of the product, and then Fulton Market, which is also another freezer facility. Although that's a conclusion that the court reached, I think, without considering the totality of the production of the meat. First, the evidence that was presented at trial is they don't know when the meat was produced. They don't know whether it was in the end of October or through and including March of 2001. Second, the records that are produced by Brookfield are incomplete. On its face, the testimony of the individual who is the quality assurance manager said they're incomplete, they don't cover all the days. In addition, the quality control person said we could not find conformance. When he says conformance, meaning we can't match up a day when the meat was produced or processed to the documents that we produced to establish this essentially conformity with the contract terms. Second, the documents from B&B essentially are wholly inadequate in that there's a possibility that this meat, in fact, the testimony was that meat was produced as far back as October or November, and including the direct testimony of Mr. Muffler, but B&B only has records from March 19 of 2001 through and including the date of delivery. Finally, there are no records from Fulton Market, none whatsoever with respect to the freezer and refrigeration issues. In addition, there is no records from the trucking company that moved the material from either to B&B or to Fulton Market. So what we have is a situation where the judge relied upon essentially incomplete records to establish that there was conformity. This is all the more ironic in that the trial court specifically ruled that Mr. Elliott from the United States Department of Agriculture, who is the inspection or inspector assigned to Brookfield Farms, could not testify. And the reason why he could not testify is because the underlying investigation was incomplete. She specifically ruled, she said, look, it's in the nature of a Daubert motion. It was presented during the course of the trial. And she said, Mr. Elliott's opinions and even his conclusions that he reached based on these investigations are insufficient and they're unsupported by facts in any way, shape, or form. So for those reasons, there is the existence of a contract, but there was no evidence and there was insufficient evidence brought forward to establish that the goods were conforming to the contract terms, meaning merchantable pork loin ribs that people could eat. There's a lot of other talk about, oh, we ate ribs, but they're not those ribs, and we didn't have any other complaints. Well, we don't know when the period of time is because they can't even establish those facts. Now, turning to the inspection term, even if we get beyond that, the inspection term required that we essentially look at some time in as short a time as possible. Well, the goods were delivered on April 25 of 2001, and they were first brought out for thawing on May 3, 2001. The first problem was noticed on May 4 of 2001. We're talking about eight or nine days, and at the most 10 days with respect to inspecting this product. There's been a lot of discussion in the briefs with respect to whether or not this is a perishable commodity. Well, yes, in its thawed state, it's a perishable commodity. But under the circumstances of it's kept frozen, the testimony of Mr. Moffler was that it can be kept frozen and kept properly for at least 3 months. So under the circumstances, the inspection term that we would suggest would be something less than 3 months, but 9 days is too short. And in fact, the judge suggested, and the trial court suggested in their opinion, that it may be 3 days. Well, this plant only operates 5 days a week, and during that 9 days, there was at least 2 days that it wasn't operating. So we're down to about seven to eight days as far as the inspection is concerned. With respect to the inspection as well, there was evidence also offered that established, and it's unrebutted evidence, the opinion testimony of Dr. Mulpey was such that this material arrived at this facility in a spoiled condition. There was an attempt at cross-examination, but it was essentially nitpicking in the sense that, yes, he wasn't there all 23 days when he viewed this, when this product was at the facility. But under the circumstances, there was nothing to rebut his testimony, and there was insufficient evidence to establish that the goods conformed when they arrived. And I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. Mr. Ketterman?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Travis Ketterman on behalf of Chicago Prime. The lower court's judgment should be affirmed for three main reasons. First, the ribs conform to the quantity, the quality, and the description as required under the contract and under the Article 35 of the treaty. Second, the ribs were not inspected in as short as practical time, and therefore the seller failed it under its obligations under Article 38 of the treaty. And finally, notice was not given to Chicago Prime of the alleged nonconformity within a reasonable period of time after Northam should have known. And therefore, Northam failed to comply with its Article 39 duty under the treaty. Let me focus first on the argument on that the ribs conformed at the time of pickup. And remember, it's instructive for the court. The ribs were processed at Brookfield Farms from a period between the end of November 2000 through April 2001. Now, that was an admission by Northam in response to the plaintiff's proposed findings and facts. So that's in the record. The ribs were produced, contrary to what counsel said, during a known time, November 2000, April 2001. Look at what evidence was presented at trial in which the judge relied upon in finding that the ribs conformed. Chicago Prime presented four witnesses. The one person was the quality control manager at Brookfield Farms during this entire period. He was present during the period. He observed product during the period. He went back and observed all the temperature records. We had evidence of the president and owner of the facility who would have been present during the time of production. We have the president and owner of one of the cold storage facilities during the entire time of production. And most importantly, we have the USDA inspector who was on site at Brookfield Farms during the entire time of the production. And yes, because prior counsel who had represented Chicago Prime had not properly disclosed Mr. Inspector Elliott as an expert witness, there was a limitation of his testimony. But Judge Brown clearly allowed Inspector Elliott to testify, and she allowed Inspector Elliott to testify as to the personal observations he made during the time of production and during the time of the investigation after the dispute arose. Look at what the Brookfield Farms and the USDA did. They went back, not only were they present during the time of production, but after the dispute arose, they went back, they reviewed temperature logs, found the temperature was in conformity. They reviewed product that was processed during the same time period. They thawed that product. They cooked the product. Indeed, they even ate the product that was processed during the same time as the disputed meat. And there were no problems. Also informative to the court's determination was the scope of Brookfield Farms' business. Brookfield Farm processes 40,000 pounds of ribs a week. They process 500,000 pounds of pork loin a week during this November through April period. There was no other complaints. No other complaints that there was a product, there was a problem with the product. And importantly, Northam's agent picked up the product at Brookfield and signed a bill of lading. Now, despite what Northam argues in their briefs, we do not rely exclusively on that bill of lading.
I thought they picked them up at the storage facility.
Which was attached to Brookfield Farms.
Is that a separate entity, though?
It's a separate entity, and the president and owner of that storage facility testified that he had reviewed that process.
When does Brookfield's responsibility, if any, end? As soon as it's given to that storage facility, or when Nordstrom's or Nordman's, whatever it is, truck that they hired, this the Brown Brothers Trucking or something, comes and picks it.
The cold storage facility wasn't in the privity of contract with us. My client purchased the meat from Brookfield, and Northam's trucking agent picked it up from the cold storage facility attached to Brookfield. So I'm not sure B&B Cold Storage ever had a legal obligation to the parties, but certainly they were involved in the trial and reviewed the records.
All right, just in layman's turn, tell me what you think happened to the ribs. You got 40,000.
I think 40,000 pounds
of ribs were rotten.
I think 40,000 pounds of ribs spoiled at Beacon. And now let's look at the facts presented at trial of Beacon. Beacon during all times was under what's called a notice of intended enforcement by the USDA. And they were under this disciplinary action because of sanitary and refrigeration violations that occurred at that plant. Now, Dr. Maltby testified that the spoilage of meat occurs from the growth of bacteria and the decomposition of fat. That occurs because of temperatures. Temperature abuse. You have a facility where these 40,000 pounds of ribs were at, which had prior sanitary and refrigeration violations, coupled with the fact, remember,
weren't some of these packed like horizontally or vertically or something?
Exactly.
Wasn't that part of this case?
It's part of the case. They presented Dr. Maltby as their witness, and Dr. Maltby testified that the ribs he observed were packed both horizontally and vertically. all of the Brookfield Farms witnesses testified, they only package their products horizontally. That's important for this reason. We cast doubt, and the lower court in its opinion cast doubt on the fact that the product that Dr. Maltby reviews 29 days after the shipment arrived at Beacon was actually the product that we sold them. We know this. We know that Beacon had other Brookfield Farm products. We know that Dr. Maltby testified he has no personal knowledge that the ribs he observed on May 23rd, 2001 were the ribs that were delivered on April 25th. We know from Dr. Maltby that he observed this different stacking of the ribs. That's not how Brookfield Farm packages ribs. We know that Dr. Maltby only observed 20 boxes. We delivered, under the terms of the contract, 1,350 boxes. So there are a number of reasons to cast doubt, and the lower court made this factual finding, to cast doubt on whether the ribs that Dr. Maltby observed on May 23rd are really the ribs in dispute. So I guess to answer your question...
I was trying to understand this. I know there's been some settlements here, but was Beacon a party?
No, and we did not bring Beacon in because we did not have a contract with Beacon. And let me just get back to Judge Evans, your question about where this meat went bad, and my assertion that it went bad at Beacon. It's also important to know that we presented the only testimony of someone who observed the ribs at Beacon between April 25th and May 23rd. And that was Stephen Moffler, who is the quality control manager at Brookfield Farms. He saw approximately equivalent to half of almost 20,000 pounds of ribs in the loading dock with a 60-degree temperature. And if you factor in Dr. Maltby's testimony, that alone, he saw that on May 9th, which was more than 13 days after they were delivered. Dr. Maltby said that meat at room temperature will certainly spoil in a 5 to 7 day time period. Therefore, the only testimony of where Beacon kept the meat comes from my client's presentation of Brookfield Farms, Stephen Moffler, who saw it in unrefrigerated loading dock. There's been questions raised in the briefs about the burden of proof. And Judge Brown held, finding that the Chicago Prime had demonstrated a prima facie case, she found more than that there is existence of the contract, as counsel asserts. She found that there was performance, there was a breach, and there was harm. But let me just say that the ribs were not inspected in as short as practical period. Even Northam's expert witness, Dr. Maltby, said there was nothing to prevent Beacon or Northam or anyone else from opening up those boxes. And the type of spoilage that he observed would have been present immediately to even the layperson. There was a gooiness and there was an overwhelming odor. I think his report even references that it's an odor that would have knocked you over. Ron Sills, in his testimony, talks about the importance of inspection in this perishable goods industry, and I'd refer the court to that. It's also instructive, I think, that the payment terms between the parties called for payment within 7 days of pickup, which meant Northam owed the money to Chicago Prime on May 1st, 2001. And Northam's witness at trial testified there was no reason on May 1st not to have paid that money. I see my time's expired. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Gitterman. Mr. Butler.
May it please the court, Kevin Butler on behalf of Northam. Judge, I want to talk about one issue that counsel brought up, and that was the issue of the vertical and horizontal boxes. The vertical boxes, there's testimony in the record that vertical boxes started to be used by Brookfield as early as January of 2001. Now, there's no date in the record that the plaintiff in this case produced into evidence as to when these this production occurred. There was testimony that it could have
occurred as early as October of 2000 up to March and April of 2001. So that can explain the why there is horizontal boxes and vertical boxes. With regard to the general issue of whether the plaintiff has met its burden of proof in this case, we have the ruling by Judge Brown that, and I find this pretty rather instructive with regard to Judge Brown's ruling on the issue of the bill of lading. Judge Brown stated that she says, quote, "It's not up to the plaintiff to show that the meat was good after the meat has been accepted by the defendant. It's up to the defendant to prove there is a reason, and the reason was found within a reasonable time." This is based on, and she also further says that the meat was, in fact, transferred, that it was transferred pursuant to a clean bill of lading, and that is in an evidence, and that is the evidence that we're looking at, the clean bill of lading. We've produced some case law in the brief regarding the language in a bill of lading, and the language in the bill of lading itself is not evidence, prima facie evidence, of conformance. And that's the issue here. The main issue here is the issue of conformance, whether they proved the necessary element in their cause of action that the meat was conforming on the date of delivery. You have three different storage facilities. Fulton, no records from them. We don't know anything about this meat from Fulton. They have a man from B&B, and they have someone from Brookfield itself to testify regarding the records of these two areas of the meat. But there's a third facility where there's nothing, no records from day one to the end day of what happened with this meat, what it was, what the temperature was, whether it was inspected, nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.